Anyway, if you have your Bible, join me in the book of Acts, chapter 18, 12 to 17. The book of Acts, chapter 18, to 12 to 17. And we're going to continue our series. Actually, this is my 26th sermon in Paul's missionary journey. It's the first missionary journey. We are in the second missionary journey. I've been reading a book. We're hitting 250 years of our nation, and I've been reading this book by Jeffrey Rosen, William Taft. I didn't know too much about William Taft. One of the things about William Taft is he probably didn't really want to be president. that's kind of the issue with him. He was actually a strict constitutionalist. That is, he went by the book and he thought everything, every decision should be made through Congress. Try that today, right? It would just be embattled. So William Taft was not a bad president. Give you some statistics here that I got from the book, and it's a very good book, by the way. In 1909, when he came into office, the deficit was $89 billion. $89 billion. 2 years later, and that was the deficit, $89 billion in debt. In 1911, he had a surplus of $11 million. So he was a strict administrator. The problem with him was that he was so strict that he'd believe that the president did not have certain executive authority that many use today. And so that really cost him a downfall. This may be interesting to note. He is the only president in U.S. history to serve both as president and on the Supreme Court as the Chief Justice. And as the Chief Justice, if you look at the particularly this Jeffrey Rosen writes about all the statistics from this. If you look at his presidency, he's ranked number 24th of all the presidents. So he's a middle-of-the-road president, didn't do damage, did some things good, but just kind of, and he actually lost re-election in 1912, which was kind of a godsend for him because his real place was on the court. Do you know what he ranks as far as Supreme Court justices? 5. That was his gift. We're going to look at another justice today, another judge, and we'll learn about him in just a few minutes. But this is a very good book, by the way. It's William Howard Taft, and it's by Jeffrey Rosen. Very good read. All right. We're looking at Paul's missionary journey. We start way down here. He comes up. He goes through Troas, Neapolis, down to Thessalonica, Berea, and I believe he went this way rather than hug the strait because they would have looked for him. It comes down to Athens, and this is where we are right now in today's scripture. We are in at the city of Corinth. So what we're going to learn today is when Christians face trouble, and that's going to hit all of us. Now notice what in verse 12, but when Gallio was proconsul, and that is proconsuls, they were appointed usually for one year or a maximum of 2 years of Achaia. And I know it looks like Achaia, but it's not, it's Euchia. So when he was the proconsul at Euchia. So this proconsul was actually a judge, if you will. He would be one that decided cases. When we look at the background here, just for a minute, at Corinth, Paul was there from autumn of 50 AD to spring of 52 AD. So roughly 18, 19 months, depending on how you look at it. Gallio was proconsul. He was appointed on July 1st, 51 AD. So it's kind of like smack dab. Paul's there, and then all of a sudden, Gallio becomes really the chief justice, if you want to put it that way. He's now going to oversee any arguments or issues about the law, anything like that. Gallio served under Emperor Claudius. Gallio's younger brother, Seneca, was also a philosopher and tutor of Nero. This is the beginning of the end here for these two. I'll share that with you in a minute. But anyway, his younger brother, Seneca, was the philosopher. Of course, Corinth, philosophy, all those things that go along with it. In 65 AD, Gallio joined his brother Seneca to work with Nero. Nero was the worst, I think, because he persecuted the church relentlessly. I mean, it was just all over. And one of the things about Seneca, unfortunately, both were involved in a plot to assassinate Nero. Of course, when you work under Nero and you see how mean and evil this guy is, there was a plot. Now, this is... So Nero ordered Seneca, and that's Gallio's brother, to slash his own wrist and to drink poison. His wife tried to die with him, but Nero stopped it. Of course, then Gallio was forced to commit suicide. So when we think about the history, particularly Nero, and we think about these justices and how they ruled, it was very harsh. And so Paul now is before Gallio, and this is also quite interesting. Here's the seat of Gallio right here, and it's called the Bema seat. And New Testament talks about we will appear before the Bema seat of Christ. That's what it's talking to. It's Gallio's Bema seat. And Gallio, an archaeological biography, this was found at Delphi. This clearly states that Gallio was proconsul in Corinth. Do you know what that does? All these little fragments and things that we learn, it validates the gospel. It validates Luke's account of Paul's journey. And there's no way to deny it because they went through this fragment and they found that, yes, Gallio was proconsul in Corinth. So to say that the Bible is made up stories with not real people is definitely not right. So the Jews now, look at continuing in verse 12. The Jews made a united attack on Paul. Of course they did. This has been going on, first missionary journey, second missionary journey. The Jews had a united attack on Paul and brought him before the tribunal, that is, in front of Gallio. So the Jews over here, they know the gospel's going out. They're talking about Jesus. They're talking about the plan of salvation. They're using the Old Testament. And the Jews have here in Corinth have had enough, and they said, okay, look, we're going to bring him before Gallio. This is what they said. This man, verse 13, this man is persuading people to worship God contrary to the law. This is a key moment in Christianity because Gallio will set the precedent of how Rome deals with Christianity. It becomes a key moment. However, Gallio would rule on this. Judaism was an official rule, but an official religion. Christianity was kind of out there somewhere, and they needed a rule on this issue. And also the mention of Gallio here solidifies the fragment that was found. So what law are we talking about? Are we talking about Roman law? Are we talking about the law of the Jews? John Polhill puts it this way. This becomes very explicit with Gallio's judgment regarding the Jews' charge against Paul. Their charge was that Paul was persuading people to worship God in ways that were contrary to the law. The charge, as it stands, is ambiguous. What law? Roman law or Jewish law? The Roman law stated, and Gallio knew this, the Roman law stated that you could not have a cult religion come in and try to influence or make converts of Roman citizens. That was a violation. That was against the law. So we're left either they were talking about Christianity as a cult religion, and trying to frame it that way before Galileo. You know, you get into these debates in the Supreme Court in the United States where justices will reinterpret what the lawyers said and they'll put it in a different context and say, well, what about this? So this is kind of what's happening. When they bring it before Galileo, they're trying to frame it in such a way to make it sound like Christianity is a cult religion. Interesting. So these Jews might have been a little smarter than the other Jews that we've bumped into on their missionary journeys. But it is interesting that God used a pagan judge to promote the gospel. And so something else, when we get into trouble, and I want you all to remember this, guys and gals, and I think this is very, very, very important for us to remember. God will fight your battles for you. God will fight your battles for you. We're going to go on and see that Paul started to speak, and it all changed. God will fight your battles for you. Sometimes you have to step up, and you have to be brave, and this is what Paul was. But one of the verses that I like, so we say with confidence, the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. What can men do to me? Ultimately, when you're in a place of trouble, you're in a place, just trust God. I can tell you through my years in the military and all of, God will protect you. He will fight for you. Things may not always go well, but God is on your side. Who can be against you? And so Paul, he goes before Galileo, knows that Galileo is appointed by Rome for 1 or 2 years. Of course, Galileo makes a bad decision to go work with his brother. And of course, that unravels quite quickly on him. So anyway, this is the situation. The Jews brought Paul before Galileo. They're framing it. He is breaking the law. He's causing Yodehavev to be worshipped improperly. And so we get to now the judge, what the judge says. But when Paul was about to open his mouth, this is verse 14. When Paul was about to open his mouth, Galileo, the chief justice, if you will, Galileo said to the Jews, if it were a matter of wrongdoing or a vicious crime. So I think we can read into this is that the Jews were saying, look, they're doing all this stuff. It's a strange new religion. And Galileo is sitting there listening to the argument as the chief justice. And he's weighing this and he goes, that's not a very good argument. Look at what he says. If it were a matter of wrongdoing or a vicious crime, if Christianity was a cult, then I could see where this would be a crime. But it looks to me like Galileo treats Christianity as a form of Judaism. I think that's what he's thinking. And so he says, if it were a matter of wrongdoing or a vicious crime, old Jews, I would have reason to accept your complaint. So if they would have gone before Galileo and said, Galileo, they're breaking Roman law, then I could see where Galileo could come down and say, you know what, you're absolutely right. We're going to deal with this. But as Galileo is listening to this, it's so awesome because God is influencing him. So anyway, he's listening to it. And he said, I'm not going to accept your complaint. Kenneth Gangel in his commentary writes this, the claim is that Paul led others to worship God in a manner different from the law, the Mosaic law. What is probably meant here is that Judaism was recognized as the official religion in the empire, but they are challenging that Christianity is not. So it's like two lawyers going before the Supreme Court and they start arguing their case. And in this case, Galileo, the Supreme Justice, says, nope, they didn't break a law. There's nothing to see here. Of course, somebody else is going to pay for this in just a few minutes as we'll look. But so what's going on here? Let me say this. You guys and gals hear me preach about the law all the time. The law was not bad. The law, the Ten Commandments and the 613 laws in the Torah, particularly from Exodus chapter 20. Those 613 laws are holy. They were given by God to the nation of Israel so that they could follow God in that era. But when we get to Malachi, we read this, "Remember the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded him in Horeb for all Israel, with the statutes and judgments." Malachi 4:4. So it's not the fault of the Jews, because they were given that law by God. So when we look at this, and I think I read this. Well, we'll get into that in a few minutes. Galatians 3:10 and 14, Paul writes this, "For as many as are the works of the law are under its curse, for it is written, cursed is everyone who does not continue in all things which are written in the book of the law to do them. But that no one is justified by law in the sight of God is evident, for the just shall live by faith." Paul comes along, knew the law better than the Jews that were bringing him before Gallio, knew the law better than them. He was the Hebrew of Hebrews. He was the highest you could get. He knew the law backwards, forwards, inside and out. And God was infinitely wise to appoint the Apostle Paul to argue against the law continuing when a person trusts in Christ. Galatians 3, "So then the law was our guardian until Christ came." So God gives the law, and the law really keeps the nation of Israel kind of in check until, in order that we might be justified by faith. But now that faith has come, we are no longer under the guardian. This is the issue. You can't be under the Mosaic law and under Christ at the same time. And if you are Christ, then you are Abraham's offspring. Do you remember that? I've been talking about that. The gospel actually starts in Genesis chapter 12. It points back to Abraham, the father of Israel. And it says here, "You are then offsprings and heir according to the promise of God." James says it this way, "For whoever keeps the whole law and yet stumbles in one point, he has become guilty of all." If it were possible for a person to live the law perfectly, then that raises another issue. The problem is not one person has ever lived all 613 laws perfectly. Impossible. But one did. Do you know who that was? That was Jesus Christ, the Son of God. He was the one that lived it perfectly in our place. You cannot be saved by law. I've heard this throughout my ministry. "Well, you know, I trusted in Christ, but I live by that law." Well, actually, you got to die to that law so that you can live for Christ. It doesn't mean you go out and do what you want to do. That's not the issue. The issue is you cannot be saved by law. It actually brings condemnation on the person that drives us to Christ, where we can bow before him and say, "I need salvation." So it's clear to me that the Jews here were talking about their own law. So when Christians get into trouble, God can use unlikely people to help. We look at the judgment here in verse 15. "But since it is a matter of questions about words." Now, this is the argument of the Jews. Gallio is now responding. Didn't even give Paul a chance to respond. Gallio is now responding. And this is Gallio's assessment of their argument before the Supreme Court in his case. "But since it is a matter of questions about words and names and your own law," Gallio saw through the issue. He saw through the issue. "See to it yourself. I refuse to judge on these things." It's clear to me, Gallio did not consider Christianity a cult. Do you see what's happening here? There's a slow shift that Rome is acknowledging that the gospel is not a cult. and there is now a shift. And Gallio, he would have easily jumped in, had the argument. This tells me that Gallio was a fair judge. It tells me that he was listening to the argument and said, "Nope, there's no standing here. This is not a breach of Roman law." Gallio decided that Roman law was not broken by Paul, and then says, "Okay, Jews, you deal with it yourself." The words refer to the content of what is spoken. The names refer to people's names. So the Jews were dropping names. It wasn't just that they were arguing that the law was broken. They were dropping names. This is what this guy's doing. Jesus. And this is what we have. Moses. And Gallio goes, "Whoa, okay, this solidifies what his view was, that the law was not broken." So he responds. And to his credit, he seemed like a fair judge, a fair justice. "See to it yourself, I refuse to rule on such matters." Nomos is the word for law. Christ is the telos, the nomos of the end of the law for those who believe. What could this be referring to? Well, no doubt they were dropping names. "Oh, gracious Gallio, God gave us the law." And Gallio's just looking, he's already thinking, "Oh, this is over already." Because they're not talking about a Jewish cult. They were talking about the Torah, probably. They were also probably talking about Jesus and his disciples. They go around and they preach this gospel. It has nothing to do with Judaism at all, but Gallio seems to think it does. He seems to think it does. And they're probably dropping the name about Jesus dying on the cross and paying for their sins. "That is a cult, Your Honor." And Gallio goes, "No, you guys dropping names all over the place. I know what you're really trying to do. You're trying to convict a man of a cult practice, which is not a cult." T.C. Smith, in his commentary, wrote this. Paul was on the verge of making his defense. Yes, he was. And this unlikely judge, Gallio, doesn't even let Paul open his mouth. I give Gallio a lot of credit. Of course, later on when he goes into conspiracy, then, of course, that's another issue. But when the proconsul hastily made a decision and cleared the court, had it been a matter of wrongdoing or vicious crime, which we read, Gallio would have considered the case valid. However, he saw that the nature of the charge was involved with verbiage about names, the Messiah, Jesus, Lord, etc., and the religious law of a subject people, so he refused to adjudicate. You know, it's kind of funny. I kind of did some research on the Supreme Court. So here's the 9 justices that currently are on the Supreme Court. You have liberal, 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 and then the rest are conservative. So basically a 6-3 issue. There was one issue back in, let me pull it back up again here for a second, when this last election, and I was surprised by this, the last election. Do you remember when Colorado tried to remove Trump off the ballot and they wound up going to the Supreme Court? I was expecting a 6-3 decision. But the whole Supreme Court, 9-0, said you cannot use the 14th Amendment that way. That was a surprise, simply because of the political culture we live in today. And ironically, a lot of decisions on the court, we don't hear this, a lot of decisions on the court are 9-0. But it's on the big ones. That's where the divisions start happening. So, and that was really kind of a shock to me about that, but I was also shocked to learn that there were like 45% of all cases that are brought before the Supreme Court are 9-0. I did not know that before I started. And by the way, we're at 250 years in our country. So the result of that decision, okay, the Jews were not happy. and he drove them from the tribunal. That means to cause someone to be moved from one point to another by force. Can you see Gallio? Get these guys out of here. And they pulled and pushed the Jews, dragged them. It's kind of like this lady screaming and they're dragging her out of the court. That's what's happening. And again, I say this, I think Gallio was a fair judge, at least in this case. And it's kind of interesting how there are justices, I understand that, there's justices that decide one way all the time. But here Gallio listened to it. He said, no, nothing was broken. There was no law that was broken. Basically, get out of my court. And he forced them out. Now, Sosthenes, who is minding pretty much his own business, they all seized him, who was the ruler of the synagogue, and they beat him in front of the tribunal. They dragged him out. They got to vent it somewhere, right? It's not unlike the results that we get from Supreme Court justices when a ruling comes down. Stuff breaks out in America and there's looting and fighting. It's basically the same stuff. They didn't get the ruling they liked, so they went to the leader of the synagogue and they pounded him up. Here you've got Gallio just watching it. He's sitting there watching it. He wasn't going to step in. He told them to deal with it. So I guess they could have been arrested for creating a riot. John Paul Hill writes this, in this instance, they beat Sosthenes, who may have already been indicating his Christian sympathies. So the ruler of a synagogue may have been leaning towards him and he said, okay, we lost this case, now let's go take care of the issue. On the other hand, the Gentiles may have been the culprits. Gallio's ejection of the Jews may have unleashed their own lament anti-Semitic tendencies. This would have rendered a sort of poetic justice. They didn't win in court, so they're going to win outside of court and they're going to beat the guy to death. This doesn't look good for the Jews. Jesus came to give peace, not license to kill because you don't like something. And this is a big moment, I think, in the issue of the gospel, because you had a Roman authority saying Christianity is not a cult. And so here is a big moment when an unlikely justice makes a right decision and forces the Jews' hands to deal with it. And look at this last verse. Gallio's up there just kind of watching the proceedings and watching the beating and But Gallio paid no attention to any of it. He might have got down off the bema seat, went back and got a cup of coffee or just kind of watching. And this poor guy here is getting beat because he's the leader of the synagogue. You know, brothers and sisters, when we go out into the world, we're not supposed to beat people. We're not supposed to treat them bad. I've always loved Judaism. I love the Jews, but this is a bad look for them in front of a pagan court. And so this is what I want to say in closing. As Christians, from time to time, we will encounter hardships. and difficulties. In fact, everyone who wants to live a godly life will be persecuted. That's me and you. It doesn't mean we live it perfectly, that we do it right all the time. I bet you this week you're going to make at least 3 mistakes. Maybe 4. If you start getting up into the 20s, then maybe you need to readjust things. But no, when you call on the name of Christ, when you call on the name of Christ, people aren't going to like it. But we're to respond to them in love, not with shouting back and angry words. That's not how we roll. And secondly, to be mindful of the fact that God knows how to take care of us. Well, I can give you some stories, and I probably have in those 18 years now I've been here, of how God rescued me from a bad situation and I had nothing to do with it. And I'm telling you that no matter what it is, maybe you're going through some hardships today, know this, that God has it, He sees it. You say, well, how can God see my little life? That's what makes Him God. God will take care of you. The issue for us in times of trouble, I think, the issue for us in times of trouble is we have to trust God. We don't need somebody from the bullpen to come in and help. By the way, we're about a month away from pitchers and catchers reporting to spring training.
Yes.
Sometimes our theology will get us into trouble. But never compromise the truth of the gospel. And I think this is, I could just see Paul. He's listening to these Jews over here. They're talking to Gallio, and Paul's getting ready. And Gallio jumps in and said, well, Paul didn't even have to talk. That's awesome. Allow God to fight your battles for Him or for you and trust in Him. That's what this life is about, folks. It's about believing what God says. And I believe in all of my heart, in all of my being, that God will protect His children. And He will take care of your life no matter what's going on in it. Whether you go before a tribunal or whether you're having difficulties at work and you're misunderstood by a coworker, I believe God will take care of it. Our response when that happens is to trust Him. And that's our job. And trust God. And I know sometimes you have to step up for yourself. I get that. But ultimately, God will take care of us.